I'd like to turn to the book of 2 Kings, chapter 5. 2 Kings, chapter 5, very familiar passage of Scripture. I'd like to begin reading with verse 1, read down through verse 14. Now Naaman, captain of the host of the king of Syria, was a great man with his master, and honorable, because by him the Lord had given deliverance unto Syria. He was also a mighty man in valor, but he was a leper. And the Syrians had gone out by companies and brought away captive out of the land of Israel a little maid, and she waited on Naaman's wife. And she said unto her mistress, Would God, my Lord, were with the prophet that is in Samaria, for he would recover him of his leprosy. And one went in and told his lord, saying, Thus and thus said the maid that is of the land of Israel. And the king of Syria said, Go, and I will send a letter unto the king of Israel. And he departed and took with him 10 talents of silver and 6,000 pieces of gold and 10 changes of raiment. And he brought the letter to the king of Israel, saying, Now when this letter is come unto thee, behold, I have therewith sent Naaman my servant to thee, that thou mayest recover him of his leprosy. And it came to pass, when the king of Israel had read the letter, that he rent his clothes and said, Am I a God to kill and to make alive? And this man doth send unto me to recover a man of his leprosy. Wherefore, consider, I pray you, and see how he seeketh a quarrel against me. And was so, when Elisha, the man of God, had heard that the king of Israel had rent his clothes, and he sent to the king, saying, Wherefore hast thou rent thy clothes? Let him come now to me, speaking of Naaman, and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel. So Naaman came with his horses and with his chariot, and stood at the door of the house of Elisha. And Elisha sent a messenger unto him, saying, Go and wash in Jordan 7 times. And that flesh shall come again to thee, and thou shalt be clean. But Naaman was wroth, and went away, and said, Behold, I thought he would surely come out to me, and stand and call in the name of the Lord his God, and strike his hand over the place, and recover the leper. Are not Abana and Pharpar, rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? May I not wash in them and be clean? So he turned and went away in a rage. And his servants came near and spake unto him and said, My father, if the prophet had bid thee to do some great thing, wouldst thou not have done it? How much rather then when he saith to thee, Wash and be clean? Then went he down and dipped himself 7 times in Jordan, according to the saying of the man of God. And his flesh came again like unto the flesh of a little child. And he was clean. What we read here, of course, is an actual historical account of how a man named Naaman was healed of the disease of leprosy during the days of Elisha. But as we all know, this is much more than just a historical account of an ancient man with an ancient disease who had been miraculously healed. It's a picture. It is a picture of ourselves. It is an illustration. It is an object lesson. It is an analogy of God's way of salvation. We are not saying, and we are not even implying, that Naaman was saved at this time, but this is a picture of the unsaved sinner, and it is a picture of salvation. We see, as we read the account of Naaman's cure, and what this really is a clear and unmistakable statement that it's God's way or no way. And that's what we want to speak upon this morning. It's God's way or no way. And we're speaking concerning the way of salvation. The first thing we want to notice in verse 1, we are told some things about the person and the condition of Naaman. We are told five specific things of his character and his accomplishments. We see that he was, first of all, captain of the host of the king of Syria. So he was a general, the commander of one of the most powerful armies in the world. He was also a great man with his master, which means he was a man of character. We see also that he was honorable. That is, he was loyal. He was trustworthy. We see he was a very successful individual. We see it was by him the Lord had given deliverance unto Syria. We also see that he was a mighty man in valor. That is, he was fearless. He was courageous. And he was a hero. He was a national hero in Syria. So he was a man of position. He was a man of great prominence. He was a man of popularity. Everyone knew. That is, everyone in Syria knew who Naaman was. He was a man of prestige. He was a man of power. He was a man who had achieved much. He was a man who had attained much. Naaman was a big name in his country. Naaman was somebody, and he was known to be somebody. He was highly revered in his country. In fact, if Naaman were living today, he would have an office, of course, and the sign on his door would read "Commander of the Army." That's pretty impressive. And the nameplate on his desk would read "Commander Naaman." Commander Naaman. And on the walls and on the shelves, I'm sure you would see his medals. There would be various plaques and awards, perhaps some letters, all things indicating that this man was a great man. That this man had accomplished much. He was a man who had fame. He was a man who had the accolades and the applause of the men of the world. He was a man of distinction. He was a man of influence. But then comes a tragic announcement. And it concerns his condition. We read in the last part of verse 1, but that is, in spite of all of this, he had a problem. He was a leper. Underneath the impressive uniform, concealed behind all the medals, was a terrible and loathsome and deadly disease of leprosy. Yes, he was the commander of the army, but he was a leper. Yes, he was a man of character, but he was a leper. He was loyal, he was trustworthy, but he was a leper. He was a man of great success, but he was a leper. He was a national hero, but he was a leper. You see, everything that he had achieved, everything that he was in the eyes of man, did not and could not change this fact. He was a leper. We live in a day, people like heroes. They're usually athletes. We live in a day of hero worship. And God's people tend to forget that behind all the prestige, behind all the fame, behind all the accolades and the applause, most of them are just lepers. And that was the case with Naaman. Whatever else Naaman was, whatever else Naaman accomplished, he was a leper. When he lay down at night, he was a leper. When he got up in the morning, he was a leper. When he stood in the court of the king, oh, he was impressive looking, but he was a leper. When he rode at the head of the army, as impressive as that might have been, he was a leper. Nothing could change that. And we know that leprosy throughout the Bible is a picture of sin. It is also a picture of the condition of the sinner without Christ. It is a picture of the desperate need and the desperate danger of the unsaved sinner. And Naaman is a picture. Naaman is a picture of the unsaved sinner. And what the unsaved sinner needs to know. If you're here today and unsaved, what you need to know is that you have a plague. Whatever else you are, whatever you have accomplished, however people may look at you, you have a plague. And it is a plague that is more terrible, more dreadful, more appalling, more alarming, more serious than the plague of leprosy. You have the plague of sin. And it has infected your entire being. And that makes your situation pressing. That makes your situation desperate. Secondly, we want to notice the providence of God in the life of Naaman. We read of this in verses 2 through 4. We see that God in His providence, God in His mercy, God in His grace, placed a witness in the life of Naaman. One day, the Syrian army marched through Israel, and they took captive this young girl. And there was something in her that caused Naaman to think she will make a good maid for my wife. And so she was placed in the house of Naaman. Her name isn't given. She is simply referred to as the little maid. I believe she was placed there by God. Be a witness, to be a testimony that there is a cure. You and I have been placed in various places, wherever it is, school, work, neighborhood, wherever it is, to be a witness, to be a testimony. And when she knew that Naaman had leprosy, she knew also that there was hope. And she knew that there was a way of restoration. And she mentions that in verse 3. She said to Naaman's wife, "Would God, my Lord, that is Naaman, were with the prophet that is in Samaria, for he would recover him of his leprosy. She told Naaman's wife, there's a cure. There is a cure for this leprosy. There is a way of restoration. And it's with the prophet of Israel, Elisha. Naaman, by God's providence, this was made known to Naaman. This was made known to the king of Syria. And then in verses 5 through 10, we have Naaman's quest for a cure. And oh, how we see once again the lost sinner as we follow Naaman in his quest for a cure. Notice the first part of verse 5. And the king of Syria said, go, and I will send a letter unto the king of Israel. The little maid mentioned nothing about the king of Israel. Nothing. That wasn't in the message. And we see it was also a letter of recommendation. Verse 6, this is what's in the letter. I have therewith sent Naaman, my servant. And don't you think following those words were everything that Naaman had accomplished? How important Naaman was. What the unsaved sinner needs to know. You have nothing. You have nothing to make an impression upon God. Is that not what Naaman and the king of Syria were trying to do? They were trying to make an impression. Why Naaman was worthy of a cure. But unsaved sinner, you have nothing to make an impression upon God. You and who you know has no impact upon God. Has nothing to do with salvation. And will not influence God. But we see immediately Naaman and the king of Syria are interested in influencing here the king of Israel. And so many lost sinners, that's exactly what they're trying to do. That's what works-based salvation is all about. It's about impressing God. And here they are, they're trying to impress God. When you tell a sinner that they're wicked and they're evil and that they're sinners and they tell you, well, I'm not that bad. What do they say? They think that they can impress God. You can't impress a holy God. An absolutely holy God. But they tried. Naaman in his quest thought that he could buy a cure. Naaman, wanting to be cured, hears one day the wonderful news that there is recovery from the dreadful and deadly disease of leprosy. And immediately, Naaman thought that such a cure must be bought. And that such a cure could be bought. You notice in verse 5, as he prepares for his journey, he departed and took with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 pieces of gold, and 10 changes of raiment. Naaman thinks he's somebody. Naaman feels that he's important. And Naaman feels that he has what it takes to obtain the cure. You realize that most lost sinners think that today? That there's somebody. And that somehow, some way, they have what it takes to purchase the cure. But again, what every unsaved sinner needs to know is that you have absolutely nothing to offer unto God for the salvation of your soul. You have nothing. You're bankrupt. The life, the deliverance, the forgiveness, the justification, the reconciliation that you so desperately need cannot be bought. You do not have what it takes to purchase this cure. But the unsaved sinner needs to realize that it is not as buyer and seller that God and man meet. It's not how you meet with God. You have nothing. You have nothing to offer. The third thing we see is that Naaman, in his quest for a cure, went to the wrong person. Again in verse 3, the prophet that is in Samaria, for he would recover him of his leprosy. And Naaman, rather than going to the God-sent prophet that could cure him, where did he go? He went to an earthly king. He went to an earthly king. And we just picture him as he arrives at the house of Elisha. Oh, he's so proud. There he is with his entourage at the king's residence. If he lived today, it would be the stretch limousines. Oh, he has it all. But there he is in all of his pride. And Naaman was sure that he would leave the king's house cured of his disease. Why? Because of who he was. Because of what he had to offer. So there is Naaman, filled with pride, still thinking that he is somebody. But he's at the wrong place. And he's standing at the wrong door. And Naaman, a leper, desperately needing a cure, filled with pride, thinking that he is somebody. Thinking that he can make an impression. Thinking that this letter will make an impression and have some influence and that he would be able to buy a cure. There he is. And that is a picture of many lost sinners today. They desperately need deliverance. And there they are with the pride. And there they are thinking that they are somebody. There they are thinking that they can make an impression and have an influence. And there they are standing at the wrong door. And many of them spend their whole life standing at the wrong door. You see, what the lost sinner needs to realize is there is only one door. And that door is Jesus Christ. John chapter 10 verse 9 makes that very clear. There's only one door. But Naaman is standing at the wrong door. You see, what Naaman did is what lost sinners try to do all the time. He is trying to bypass God's one and only remedy.
God's remedy in this case was the prophet Elisha. And Naaman is standing before the king of Israel. And lost sinners today are trying to bypass God's only way. God's only way is Jesus Christ. And if you try to bypass that way and you leave this life trying to bypass this way, you will die and you will spend an eternity in hell. And Naaman would have remained at that door. And had Naaman, had not God intervened, Naaman would have died the miserable death of a leper. And as we've said before, all lost sinners, deny it as much as you want, but all lost sinners, you are depending upon something for salvation. You're depending on something. You're standing at the wrong door, trying to bypass the one and only way. You notice also that Naaman, in his quest for a cure, had an entirely wrong mindset. We see this in verses 8 and verse 9. There's Naaman. He's got all the silver, all the gold, has all the royal apparel, a fine chariot, the best of horses, impressive servants with him, and they arrive at the house of Elisha. God intervened, and we see Elisha says in verse 9:8, let him come now to me. And Naaman came. And he came with his horses and with his chariots. He came with an entirely wrong mindset. He arrived at the house of Elisha, and in his mind, he's captain of the host. In his mind, he's a great man with the master. In his mind, he's honorable. In his mind, he's a man of great success. He's a national hero who just happened to be a leper. That's the way Naaman is looking at this. He is a great military man, a man of renown, a man of wealth, a man of influence, a man of fame, who just happened to be a leper. You see, as he's at the door of Elisha now, he still thinks that he's somebody. He still thinks that he can make an impression. He still thinks that he can somehow influence and purchase a cure. In verse 10, Elisha sent a messenger unto him. And he said, go and wash in Jordan 7 times, and thy flesh shall come again to thee, and thou shalt be clean. So God sends a messenger, or Elisha sends a messenger out to Naaman. He says, are you Naaman? Naaman, filled with pride, yes, I am. I'm Naaman, captain of the host of Syria. And the messenger says, Naaman, Elisha told me to tell you to go down to the muddy Jordan River and you get in that river and you dunk yourself 7 times. You dunk yourself, and then you dunk yourself again, and then again, and again, and again. And you'll be clean. That was God's way.
That was God's only way for a cure. It was an announcement. It was an announcement of God's chosen means. It was an announcement to Naaman, it's God's way or no way. Acts chapter 4, verse 12, neither is there salvation in any other. There's no other name given among men whereby we must be saved. God's one and only provision of hope. God's one and only provision of escape. God's one and only provision of rescue for the guilty sinner is Jesus Christ. There is no other way. Now notice Naaman's response to the message. But Naaman was wroth. He was angered. He was outraged that Elisha would tell him to go down to the muddy Jordan River, an insignificant river. Why did this outrage Naaman? Why did this anger Naaman? Because it went against Naaman's theory. Why is it today that the lost sinner gets so angered? Because it goes against their theory. It goes against their theory. So this angered Naaman. But another reason it angered Naaman is because God's way did not treat Naaman with the class, with the dignity, and with the respect that he deserved. He says, I thought that Elisha would come out, wave his hand over the spot, and it'd be gone. I thought that he would come out of his house and he would greet me as a person of rank. That he would treat me with some dignity. He desired to be treated like a great man who happened to be a leper. But Elisha treated him as a leper and not as a great man. And that's what God does. He treats sinners as sinners. And that's why people get angered. Today, when you say that mankind is a sinner, they get angry because they're somebody. They have something to offer. They can make an impression. How dare you say that I'm a sinner? That I'm wicked. You're to treat me with some class. You are to treat me with some dignity. And churches have fallen into that mindset. Well, you know, we've got to treat them with kid gloves. That's not what the Bible says. And sinners get angry. But we don't want them to get angry. Don't you get it? If they don't get angry, either you're preaching the wrong thing or they haven't heard a word of it. Naaman was enraged at the message. Because God's way meant that Naaman's accomplishments, his so-called merits, all of his silver,
of his gold were worthless. And you tell the lost sinner that everything he has, everything that he thinks he has, it's all worthless in the matter of salvation. And people get upset. And that's what Elisha was telling Naaman. He was saying, Naaman, I'm not impressed with your silver. I'm not impressed with your gold. I'm not impressed with your uniform. I'm not impressed with your chariot. I'm not impressed with your horses. I'm not impressed with any of that. It's all worthless. Now go down to the Jordan River. Naaman was outraged. When people are told that they have nothing to offer God, that they are unrighteous, that they are filthy, they are ungodly, that they are vile, they are wretched. This outrageous people. They want to be treated with some class and with some dignity. They want to be told, yes, you may not be perfect, but you're not so bad. But the Bible says you're rotten through and through. And that angers people. And people will say, well, you need to encourage the lost sinner. You first have to give them the bad news. And then you can tell them the good news. The good news means nothing without the bad news. And the bad news is you have nothing to offer unto God. You're wicked, vile, and wretched. And again, this enrages people. We read here that Naaman turned and went away in a rage. Verse 12. But praise the Lord. The story doesn't end there. Doesn't end there. And Naaman, in his anger, sought a substitute for God's way. Verse 12. Are not Abana and Pharpar rivers of Damascus better than all the waters of Israel? He's seeking a substitute. And this is what the enraged sinner does. They seek a substitute. But as long as you're going down that road, you are in danger of dying as a leper, as a sinner, without Jesus Christ. But then notice verse 13. His servants came and said unto him, my father, if the prophet had bid thee to do some great thing, you would have done it. And that's true today. You can tell the lost sinner, I tell you what, you crawl on your hands and knees on broken glass around the block and the Lord will save you. That won't offend them. Some of them will do it. Some of them will do it. It's a great thing. You join the church and the Lord will save you. You do the best you can. You become a deacon, or you do this or you do that, and the Lord will save you. And people are all for that. Doing some great thing. But you tell them that their one and only hope is Jesus Christ. And they have nothing to offer. And they must come in faith, trusting the work of Jesus Christ, repenting of their sins. And they go away in a rage. And this is what Naaman did. But his servants intervened. They intervened. Went away in a rage many times, hearing the gospel. The gospel used to infuriate me. But God intervened. God intervened.
That's why I always have hope.
I've seen sinners many times in funeral homes, a church building, many, many times go away in a rage. Just absolutely outraged. The only hope is that God will intervene and turn them around.
And that's what happened to Naaman. So Naaman goes down to the River Jordan, realizing now that his silver and gold mean nothing. His position means nothing. He's given up all of his preconceived notions. And he submits to the words of Elisha. We see, then went he down in verse 14 and dipped himself 7 times in Jordan.
Now I've heard people preach that he dipped himself the first time, looked at the leprosy, a little bit of it was gone. Dipped himself a second time, a little bit of it was gone. I don't believe that. I believe he dipped himself 6 times. And that leprosy was still the same. And then he dipped himself the 7th time. And it says he was clean.
He was clean. What the silver and gold could not purchase was gone. The leprosy was gone. The leprosy which the king of Israel could not heal,
it was gone. And sinner, there's only one hope today. There's only one way of rescue. There's only one way of deliverance. There's only one way to be set free and to be released from the dominion, from the power of sin. There is only one way to be released from the wrath and doom to come. But be sure of this. It is God's way or no way. It is God's way or no way. And I've heard probably 1,000 times that's your opinion. That's what it says in this book over and over and over again. It's God's way or no way. And you get to Revelation chapter 20 and you see that innumerable host standing before the great white throne judgment, and every one of them realizes it was God's way or no way. Oh, that you would realize that before you leave this earth. Before you leave this earth, that you would realize it's God's way or no way. Don't spend your life standing at the wrong door. You'll die there. You'll go to hell there. And yet, it's sad today. You look at all the famous people, all the people that are heroes and worshiped, and God's people have forgotten. They're lepers. They're lepers. They're on their way to hell. And here is God's people worshiping them, thinking that they're somebody. But the only way that they can be saved is to come to Jesus Christ like everybody else. You're nothing. And you have nothing to offer. As long as you think you're somebody, you're not going to be saved. And thank God he's the only one that can bring us to that place. I've seen it happen. You've seen it happen. I've seen people sit in the pew thinking, I'm somebody. And God breaks them down and teaches them, you're nobody. And you have nothing to offer. And here they come. The Lord saves their soul. But it's God's way or no way. And that's true about everything, but especially about salvation. Brother Larry, if you'd come and